Welcome to the Future Link, where we explore the latest trends, technologies, and ideas shaping the future of the internet. Today, we are joined by our special guest, Roger Dooley. We will be discussing the exciting marketing updates for AI, neural marketing, and more. Welcome, Roger. It's such an honor to host you today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Cheetham. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, of course. It's my pleasure. And let me introduce you, and please add if I forgot something. Roger is an author and international keynote speaker. He has been in neuromarketing for more than 10 years. He's focused on helping market and sell better using brain science and behavior research. His books include Friction, right? The untapped force that can be your most powerful advantage. And the global bestseller, Brainfluence. And he writes the popular blog Neuromarketing and a column at Forbes.com. So what we forgot here?
Oh, that's about it, Cheetham. Although, you know, I was doing the math and I've been writing about neuromarketing for just under 20 years now. I'm amazed that it's been that long.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's time to update. Oh my God, it's 20 years is a lot. Yeah, you can maybe start neuromarketing your experience in this field. Please feel free to start like it's your past experience as well, because I was going to ask you what recent findings or technologies in the field of neuromarketing have excited you the most.
Right. Well, Cheetham, when I started writing about neuromarketing, there were a few issues then. First of all, there were a few service providers offering to do neuromarketing studies, and their claims were sometimes a little bit exaggerated. They didn't really have the science to back up what they said they could do. But also, these studies were very expensive. The only companies then that could do neuromarketing studies were big brands like Coca-Cola or BMW, simply because the technology was very, very expensive. Now, what's happened over the last couple of decades, and in particular accelerated by the pandemic, was that cost of entry into neuromarketing has come down dramatically. We've seen tools that used to be only available in expensive lab studies. For instance, eye tracking. Eye tracking used to be done only in labs where you could see, and eye tracking is an important part of neuromarketing and really any kind of marketing, because when people look at an image, that look at a video, you want to know what they're looking at. They may not be looking at what you want them to, and then you could adjust the content appropriately. But it used to be something that had to be done in a lab, either with expensive glasses or expensive sensors to measure people's gaze. Now, this can be done using device cams, webcams. It's not as accurate. If you look at the heat maps they generate, the lab-generated heat maps are much cleaner, but still, if you don't have the budget for an expensive lab study, the device cam work may be good enough. This is available as a SaaS service for quite inexpensively, a software as a service. Beyond that now, at least three companies, maybe more, are offering AI eye tracking simulation, where they have trained using machine learning AI on thousands of human eye tracking studies to create an algorithm that would be able to then view an image, look at a video, and predict where humans would look. And the results they produce, again, are not as good as real lab studies or even studies involving real humans, because sometimes they're going to make mistakes. On the other hand, for many questions, you simply don't have the budget for big studies, where this you can do in 5 or 10 minutes and see, okay, well, how could I change this homepage on a website so that people are looking at what I want them to look at, and so on.
Yeah. And I can add maybe that kind of emotion detection and recognition market, right? And emotions are universal, which means they are the same in different cultures, and it's important for marketing and brands. I think that's why the emotion detection and recognition market is predicted to grow. And I heard the market grow to more than 100 billion by 2030. Sounds promising, doesn't it?
That sounds very large prediction.
Very large.
We'll leave it there.
Okay. Yeah, it's as you say, AI in marketing, also combined with neuromarketing, it's going to be crazy. The integration of artificial intelligence into marketing strategies is on the rise recently. How do you think AI will change the way brands understand consumer behavior?
Well, I think there is no area of marketing that won't be dramatically affected by AI. I mean, I don't think there's any piece of marketing that people are doing now where AI won't change that. And one thing that I think is really underestimated is the potential for AI to understand consumer emotions. Recently wrote at Forbes about a big cruise line that decided that to bring three of its ships together in the middle of the ocean for a photo shoot. This is basically a marketing photo op because the ships were going to be kind of in the same place. And so they could do, they could bring them together and get a helicopter out there and shooting photos and videos and such. Great, great marketing collateral. But unfortunately, one of the ships had to be rerouted significantly to the point where they were going to be delayed into their final port, where people have to catch airplanes or have other arrangements already made. And this particular ship was a small ship, only 700 passengers, but these were, it was their five-star cruise brand where people expect a perfect, seamless experience. These are older, wealthier cruisers who have spent maybe 20, 30 years cruising. They expect really perfection on these cruises. And suddenly, a few days before they're due to arrive in their final port, they're told, oh, if you made your own travel arrangements, you need to adjust these. And the letter that was written was very formal and personal and showed no empathy for the fact that these people were in the middle of their vacation, then they suddenly have to start calling their airlines or travel agents and changing everything that they had set up for probably for months. And they were going to do this in the middle of Florida spring break, which is a time of year when millions of college students and other young people converge on Florida for spring break. So, you know, there's no hotel rooms, few airline seats available, so that whatever arrangements these people had to make were now going to be made under very difficult conditions and probably not optimal for what they hope for. And the only concession that the cruise line made was if people incurred any additional expense, they could submit those receipts within 30 days. And if they were reasonable, if the expenses were reasonable, they would be reimbursed. In other words, they treated it merely as a transaction. Okay, if you have any extra expense, then we'll pay you for it if it's not too much. Now, to me, I looked at this letter and I said, I can't believe they sent this thing out. It looks tone deaf to me that they're going to tell this very elite group of their most loyal, most highest revenue customers, you know, they've got to change the arrangements, but with no additional commentary beyond that. So I asked Claude 3, one of the many large LLMs out there, AI models, I asked it to review the letter and rate it in terms of empathy and ask it how the people receiving it might respond. And this could have been done on ChatGPT or Gemini or one of the others, but Claude absolutely nailed it. It said, okay, for empathy, this is, scores 2 out of 5. It identified the tone of the letter as impersonal, informal, and it correctly identified that the passengers who were expecting this seamless cruise would be upset, and they would view that the company was prioritizing marketing over guest experience. Identified everything that I had identified, and certainly other marketing people who reviewed that letter would identify as being problematic. I asked it to create a sort of a damage control letter, and it was much better than the original one written by the human executives. This was, you know, it showed empathy. It understood that people were going to be, you know, their plans were going to be disrupted. It offered assistance in making arrangements if people needed it because they, you know, recognize this is going to be a difficult time to make new plans. And it was far more empathetic, far more human than the actual human letter. And so to me, the takeaway from all this was that AI can actually add the human touch to communications. Now, that doesn't mean that AI is perfect. I've been trying to train an AI model to write like me for months, where I feed it my writing and then I say, okay, write like this, and then I correct it and I give it feedback, and it still doesn't produce anything that's directly usable.
Yeah.
So AI is not perfect, but in this case, to me, had somebody in that large corporation simply asked the same question I did, hey, we're going to send this letter out to our customers, what will they think? It would have told them all the things were wrong with it and suggested ways that it could be made better. You know, and to me, this is amazing because that decision had to be a high-level decision in the company because they rerouted three ships in the middle of the ocean You know, a marketing intern can't call up ship's captains and say, hey, we need you to change course. It's got to be a very high level decision. And they completely, the humans completely blew it. So, yeah. You know, to me, AI has a lot to contribute. AI, I've played with other things, creating customer personas for different situations. And I think the only thing that you have to realize is that it's not perfect. It does make mistakes. If it creates five customer personas, that doesn't mean that these are five accurate ones or the only five. But I think you have to treat AI as like a very eager junior helper who's absolutely tireless, will do whatever you ask, but you need to check their work.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. And also I'm hearing some big corporates, people are working in big corporates and they're marketer and they're not allowed to use this AI tools in their work environment because it's not allowed to use some AI components, some AI websites, it's right. And how will affect AI in marketing in that way as well?
That's a good point, Cheatham. Some corporations, because they have proprietary data, don't want to use AI because they don't want the data going outside their company. Chances are what these companies will do is put proprietary versions of these language models inside their corporation so that all the data stays inside and doesn't go out. But I think sometimes too, there's just fear. In other words, I don't think that they would have been exposing any company data had they run that letter through ChatGPT or Claude or one of the other ones. You know, now if you say, okay, we've got this giant set of data we've collected from our customers, we need to analyze it. That's a different situation. There you want to be sure you've got some guardrails so that you're not exposing your customer data or your proprietary company data. But that's going to evolve. Large corporations cannot not use it. They've got to use it. They're going to find ways to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's marketers, big corporations, agencies, consultants. All these parties have to put ethical use for the AI, right? We need to find out how we can use ethical way in various way, actually. And yeah, I want to come up sustainable marketing as well. I know you are working on that side and I'm curious about consumer interest in like environmental and social responsibility is growing years and years. How should brands adapt to this increasing awareness? Every brand have to adapt. What do you think?
Well, I think it's important, but it's not always a straightforward or obvious as to what the best way is to do that. In the U.S., some of these initiatives are somewhat controversial. I mean, there are large segment of the population, for instance, believes that climate change is not real, that it's somehow invented by politicians to control them. So for people with beliefs like that, you know, emphasizing various green aspects of your product or sustainable products may not be a win. It may make them suspicious of you. And I think another area that is problematic is when companies use basically, well, they do greenwashing type things where they are trying to look sustainable. So they give people the option of buying carbon offsets for their plane ticket. But these carbon offsets are purchased from places that may or may not really be limiting carbon. I mean, they say, well, we didn't cut these trees down, so we can sell that. The fact we didn't cut them down to companies to sell to their customers. And, you know, is that really a solution? If companies say, hey, we're doing these things and make them look sound green, but the basic product itself is not, you know, like plastics manufacturers, you know, have all these recycling symbols and everything, you know, to talk about recycled content. This is meant to imply that they are really a sustainable product, but the product itself isn't sustainable. So I think, you know, the key things I would say are, first of all, be honest. If you're going to do something that is truthful and honest. And I think consumers will appreciate that. And I think that gradually the negative aspects in the U.S., and I think probably in Europe and other countries, there's less of a backlash against things like sustainability and environmental concerns than in some parts of the U.S. But I believe that's going to go away over time.
Yeah, we even talk about neuromarketing developments and AI in marketing and how we can use with ethical way also like we put your opinion here in sustainable marketing and how brands can be honest in the beginning for about their product, right? And I want to ask in lastly, Roger, with your many, many years experience, digital transformation and customer experience are constantly changing, especially this year. Maybe we will see next year really different approaches and maybe applications on that. How is digital transformation for you shaping customer experience with this new technology developments in marketing era?
Let me address that in two ways, Cheetah. First of all, I think that today sort of all marketing is digital marketing. When you are looking for a product, if you're in a store, maybe you've got their app open because you're trying to find it. If you are planning a trip to the store, you're looking online and it's offering you, it should be offering you options. Well, this is in the store. Here's where you can find it in the store, or we can deliver it, or we can ship it from our warehouse. And the companies that recognize this, that it's really all one channel, that, you know, those are going to be the winners. You can't really distinguish between the areas, and it applies to purchasing products, to returns, to, conducting research about products and everything else. So to me, that's the first realization, that there is no, separation from digital marketing and everything else and digital customer experience from retail experience. They've got to be integrated. And then I think the other aspect is, of course, we already talked about this, and that is artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is really going to transform customer experience, and in particular, customer service. There are now tools that are very, first of all, people hate automation right now, the current state of automation. Things like voice menus, where you've got to listen to all these choices, and you listen to 10 of them, and none of them are right. And so you got to listen to them again, or try and figure out how to get to a human. People hate that. And people hate chatbots that are useless, where you're typing in questions to the chatbot and either it doesn't answer, know how to answer it, and say, I don't know that, I don't know that, or it gives you answers that don't apply to your question. Yeah. But I think that's all about to change. Okay. With particularly the combining both machine learning and generative AI, we're going to see chatbots, whether they are like text chat, or whether they are audio or even a full video chat, just like we're talking here on both audio and video, Cheetham, that are very, very human-like, first of all, that are trained for empathy. Into these algorithms, they are trained to understand what the customer might be feeling at that moment. And then presumably too, they can also be trained on the company's knowledge base of all the things that a customer service rep would know, plus trained on millions or however many past conversations the company's had, so that not only can they see what problems are coming up, but also which solutions from the human reps were the most successful in solving the problem and maybe making an additional sale. And when you integrate all this into a very effective chatbot, again, it could be text chat, voice chat, or even a full video chat, you've got a very powerful tool. I don't think most consumers really feel a need to connect with a human being. If they're calling into customer service, they want their problem solved. And so I think this is going to dramatically change call centers. You will lose most of your humans in call centers because these new bot reps are going to be smarter. They're going to be tireless. They're going to be scalable. I used to manage a small call center while I owned a company that had one. And it was always difficult to get the right number of people there because, sometimes you need three times as many people because of some external thing going on. And as a result, if you didn't have them, you had people on hold or having to call back and so on. But if you've got bots, you can simply dial up more bots. And so people get taken care of immediately. They'll get taken care of more effectively in many cases. So I think it's going to change a lot. It's not going to be good for call center reps. You're going to see millions of people in every country, in the U.S., in Europe, in the Philippines, in India, which are big call center countries. They're going to be displaced. But I think overall, the customer experience is going to be improved.
Yeah, I will let my brother definitely, because he's managing call center Vodafone Turkey. And he has to think about it. Yeah, thank you, Roger. And you pointed really important. Actually, they will all like pain points in our era and customer experience, also like call center era. I think it's affecting the whole marketing field. So how can people find you and your books? Do you have any conferences planned soon? Will you be coming to Istanbul?
I would love to come to Istanbul. I've only been there as a tourist, and it's a beautiful city, and I only got to see a small part of it. So that would be great. But I don't currently have any speeches planned there, but you never know what could happen. As far as how to find me, the best place to start is rogerdooley.com. I've got links there to my social profiles, my Forbes content, my neuromarketing content, my YouTube content. And otherwise, just Google Roger Dooley and you'll find my stuff.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time for this show and sharing your knowledge and experience with us.
Well, thank you, Cheetham. It's been fun.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, see you next time. Goodbye.